Hey everybody, welcome to the Soto Mojo podcast. No Adam Levy this week. This is the interim co-host, Colby Patnode. I am here with... Thanks, Alex. That was the voice of Alex Summerfield, who's here with us today, along with Riley Baker and our news contributor, Will Stone. Say hello, guys.
Hey. What's up?
Hi.
All right, so I hope you guys all enjoyed your Easter weekend. If you celebrate, if not, I just hope you had a really nice weekend. But, you know, before we begin, we're going to honor Adam here with his interesting stat of the week. The Mariners' bullpen ERA entering Friday, and that's a pretty important distinction, had a league-worst ERA at 7.54, and they'd already blown five saves. That is the... According to Adam's notes here, since 2000, a bullpen has never had a worse ERA and most blown saves in the same year.
Oh my God! Okay, it's happening. Everybody, stay calm.
What's the procedure?
Stay calm.
Wait.
Everybody, calm down.
Everybody, panic! Oh my God! There's a bear loose in the Coliseum.
That was an overreaction.
There will be no refund! Your refund will be escaping this death trap with your life!
So, again, that's entering Friday night. That's before the game. I think if we wrote this this interesting stat after this weekend, it would be a little bit different. But that's our interesting stat of the week. We'll certainly get into the bullpen a little bit later. But actually, you know what? Let's get into the bullpen right now. Guys, going into this week, so ignore the last 3 days, how did you feel about the bullpen?
It's been bad. It's hard to watch. That's all I can say. Like, it's just...
That's the understatement of the year.
Gosh, it's just so hard to watch it. Like, I mean, just there's not really any one guy you can say, like,
yes, there was. Like, it's Casey Fien, and now Casey Fien's gone, so everything's fine now. Tony Zick is here. Casey Fien is gone.
I mean, no one's just been really, like, the consistent guy. I mean, it's only been, you know, a couple weeks, so no one's really settled into that role yet. Well, obviously no one has yet, but I don't know. It's just, hopefully Tony Zick can come in and just be effective, because no one else really has.
Alex, what do you think?
Well, it's not. I mean, I thought it was just Casey Fien, but I don't really have any huge issues with the bullpen. I think that, yeah, like I said, I think they're finally figuring out, like we saw this weekend, and everyone's just kind of settling into the role, and they figured out what they're going to be, or what situations they'll be brought into this year.
Will, do you think this weekend the bullpen kind of? Go ahead.
I think what I saw from the bullpen this weekend, I think there was a lot. Like, obviously, coming into this weekend, it was a mess, and it felt like everybody was a mess, especially, you know, Scribner, Vincent, Fien, until they, you know, sent him down. But I really liked what I saw from Evan Marshall. I liked what I saw from Zebchinski this weekend again. I mean, he's been pretty solid consistently. And then when Altuve got out of his jam today in whatever, the seventh or something like that, you know, I think like, you know, whoever it was that just said just a second ago, I think they're starting to figure out what roles they're going to be in and stuff like that. And I think that'll be a big key to that.
You guys buy into the idea that relievers pitch better when they know their roles. You know, if anybody follows me on Twitter, they know that I'm always calling for them to bring in Edwin Diaz in, like, the sixth inning. But I know some people think that roles really matter. So what do you guys think? How important are roles to a major league bullpen?
I think as far as innings go, like closers and that kind of thing, I don't think it's as big of a deal. But if you're a guy like Jepchinski, you know, where you come in against one or two batters, I think that's kind of something that you need to know that's your role, so you can prepare for that. So you know you're only going to be out there, you know, a couple batters. So you don't really have to conserve any pitches or anything. You just go all out. But, yeah, as you, like, you've kind of opened my eyes toward this whole Edwin Diaz thing. Like today, when I think it was when they brought in, Altuvilla, I was thinking they just need to bring in Diaz right here. They just need to go with their best closer. So, yeah, as far as just like reserving him just to be that ninth inning guy, I think that could be a little more fluent. That's just kind of my opinion now. But you've opened my eyes, Colby.
Yeah. Just in case you guys don't follow me on Twitter, which I'm sure you don't. But basically my thing with Diaz has been that I want to use him whenever the game is on the line, whether that's the fifth inning or the ninth inning. I don't care. But whenever I get that sick feeling in my stomach, like, oh, man, they need this out, otherwise they're going to lose, that's when I would go to Diaz. So, Alex, what do you think about roles?
You have some confidence in the bullpen, Colby? Jeez.
Because, like you said, they've been terrible. Why would I?
I guess they don't really have a setup guy. There's no real setup guy. I mean, you've got Diaz, who's obviously the closer, and it's his role. I mean, you've heard, like, from guys who have been bullpen guys before, they always talk about, oh, they're just settling into the role. They know when they're going to come and pitch, or, like, what situations they're going to come and pitch. So I'd say it's important, so you're mentally prepared that your time is up, or you're next to come in and out of the bullpen.
Will, what do you think?
I'm thinking, like, role, you know, the role is important, you know, to a point. But I think I'm in the same boat as you when it comes to the Diaz, you know, factor. Like, if we, especially, like, in that Angels game, the horrid meltdown, I think when you're service, you say, you know, we're up by 6 runs. It's not a save situation, but we badly need this win. We might as well bring Diaz in and, you know, slam the door on him. And I don't think you really want to bring Diaz in a mop-up role to clean up what some other, you know, reliever jacked up in the process. So I think really just if, you know, we need an out and we know a guy who can get an out, you know, Diaz, Zepchinski, whoever it be, you know, if you can just count on him for an out, bring him in regardless of where it is.
All right, last thing on the bullpen here, guys. You guys mentioned earlier that Tony Zick is back. Casey Fien has been demoted.
Yeah.
much to Alex's delight, but I was thinking about this today when I was watching the Mariners game. Is it possible that we as Mariner fans have probably underappreciated what Steve Cishek can bring to the table in the bullpen? He's kind of been a easy target for Mariner fans because of all the blown saves last year, but you know, in between all the bad, there was a whole lot of good. So do you guys think that maybe we've overlooked the importance of Steve Cishek in this bullpen?
Probably. I mean, I was one of the people where, like, every time he blew a save, it was like, Cishek. But then, you know, there would be, like, most of the time he'd be effective. He's no Rodney, so that's good.
I miss him.
He's just an interesting pitcher. He's a big guy. He's got that, you know, sidearm action. So he's fun to watch, and obviously you want to see him succeed. But yeah, I think the blown saves kind of put a negative light on him, even though it wasn't, you know, he wasn't just blowing save after save. It was just kind of just big moments. But yeah, I think he'll bolster this bullpen when he comes back.
Right, he's obviously not a closer anymore, but I like his funky delivery, and he can come in some situational parts of the game and get some righties out, or even some lefties. It's that delivery is weird, and it's just hard to pick up.
I think the thing is, like, I mean, I was definitely in that same boat of like, oh gosh, blow the save again, you know, that kind of thing. But it really, you know, when we switched him out of the closer role and into more of like that setup, you know, slash seventh inning guy, you know, that kind of thing, he thrived. He really, you know, you kind of count on him for a good solid inning. And so I think, you know, I think the Mariners kind of have to figure out that, you know, in between time before we get Cishek back to the big league club, I think we'd have to figure out what they need to do. But once they get him back, I think that'll be really definitely a helpful addition.
I think there's some value to having a veteran who's closed before, where maybe you're more likely to bring in, say, Diaz when the bases are loaded with one out in the eighth, because you know, well, we have a guy in the back of the bullpen who's at least saved games before, and C-Sheck's really good against the righties, so I think that's probably, I would agree with what a lot of you guys said. It's painful when C-Sheck blows a save, but when he wasn't blowing the save, he was really good last year. So we'll just, one more thing on the bullpen, guys. Is there any arm that's really impressed you that maybe you were surprised by in the bullpen so far?
For me, it's just kind of Evan Marshall. Like, he just kind of came onto the team not a few games ago or a few days ago, and he was pretty effective today. Like, I didn't really expect much out of him, but
yeah,
he got the job done, which is more to say than some relievers this season.
Agreed. Maybe. Oh, sorry.
Good. Whatever. Okay. Like, you just pick up this guy in waivers, you think he's not doing well, and he comes here and he pitched well today, and I don't see anything wrong with him yet. Of course, he's only been here a little bit. He still has time to mess up, and we get mad at him. But yeah, I'd agree with Riley. That guy's doing well.
Marshall's pitched well. I think James Pazos has looked pretty good too. I mean, he had a rough outing, one rough outing, but the other outings have looked, you know, pretty good. Like, I'm pretty sold on him. I mean, I think he's kind of one of those guys where, you know, you'll take what you get from him, but he looks good so far.
The one bad outing is that questionable catch, or questionable, it's like kind of diving drop by Haniger. Otherwise, he hasn't given up a run. So
yeah, I think that's the point. Yeah.
Yeah, Pazos is the one, or Pazo, however you say it. We got to figure out how to say that.
I say it as Pazos.
We'll go with Pazos. That's fine. You know, he's the one that really jumped out at me. I was not expecting that much from him. And he's been really good. All right, so that's enough talk about bullpen guys for now. Let's move on to what we saw this weekend. Really the whole entire homestand. What we started to see is Kyle Seager kind of starting to collect hits again. Nelson Cruz has been really good the last week, so that's nice to see. And Robinson Cano, you know, he's looked pretty good in spots. He was still kind of waiting for that nice elongated streak. But what do you guys think about the Power 3 in the Mariners lineup? Do you guys think they're figuring things out, or what do you guys think about those three guys?
I think they're coming along. Obviously, all three got off to a pretty cold start. It's kind of normal for Seager. The past couple of years, he's been really slow in April and then started heating up into May and the later months of the year. Cano, you know, I'm not really worried about because he's Cano. And that's kind of the same as Cruz. And Cruz did really well today. He had just kind of like, you know, just a little floater shot into left field on a broken bat in the first inning, I think, which... you know, a little bit lucky, but maybe that's just something he needs to get going. But yeah, he had some big hits, including the walk-off in the bottom half of the ninth. So I think they're just inching their way, getting back to where they want to be.
Sure, yeah. That sounds good. They're coming around. That's all I got to say. They're coming around, like Riley said. I think we mentioned this last week, but Seager's April struggles, and he's driven in a couple of runs the past couple of days, and Cruz got his homer, and Robbie had his nice day in L.A., and he's been just improving ever since. Or I don't know why they're struggling, but it's coming around.
I think you can always count on Robbie to put it together. A little slump here or there happens. I mean, to every hitter it happens, but Robbie, you know, he's a veteran. He's proven himself over, you know, 10 years. He's a solid quality player day in and day out. Cruz, you know, you never know what you're going to get. You know, I mean, you hope you're going to get, you know, the 40 kind of homer season. And I think he'll wind up, you know, being a fine, you know, producing player this year. And the same goes for Seager. I think they're definitely putting it together. I think I don't want to say same old Mariners, because I think we, you know, there's a lot more hope with this team than in, you know, past years and stuff like that. But, you know, they're kind of those big three guys. Like, you take what you get from them, and typically that production is going to be pretty good, and you just have to live with the slumps that they, you know, hit through and stuff like that.
Do you guys think it's maybe possible that we just put too much expectation on Cano? You know, last year he hit 39 home runs and drove in 100. I mean, is that really realistic to expect from a guy who's, for most of his career, been like a 25 home run guy? Is our expectations just too high for Robinson Cano?
I think people's expectations will be a little too high. Me personally, I don't expect him to have, you know, an MVP caliber season every year.
Why not?
So my expectations are, you know, 20 home runs, 80 RBIs, just kind of.
That's so low, right?
Upper all-star levels.
That's what?
I know he's making a lot of money and he's got the big name, but I don't like to put, you know, a lot of expectations on, except for Mitch Haniger. I put a lot of expectations on I have high hopes for that guy.
We will get to Mitch Haniger a little later. Don't worry.
Yeah, that's.
Who?
All right, Alex, I'm going to have to kick you off the show now. I'm sorry.
All right, I'll leave.
Alex, what do you think realistic expectations for Cano are?
Riley, 80 RBI is too low. 100 is baseline. He has to get to 100 or else it's disappointing.
So if he hits 35 home runs and drives in 99, is that disappointing?
You said 39 is like his outlier.
Yeah.
I mean, you just kind of expect to continue what he's doing. I don't see 40 home runs from Cano, but I'd see 40 home runs from Cruz. Like, you kind of expect that. And Seager is, I think he's increased his home run total every year. So you just kind of, you expect Seager to improve and you expect Cano and Cruz to keep doing what they've always done throughout their career.
I think it's pretty safe. I think 80 RBIs, you know, is a little low too. I agree with Alex on that one.
Aha!
I know, definitely.
Fair.
I think the thing about Cano is Cano's more than his numbers indicate. Like, he could have a, you know, 25 home run season, 80 RBI season, but if he hits, you know, 325, 330, something like that, you know, has a really solid hitting year, the Mariners are going to be a lot better of a team than if he's hitting, you know, a lot of dingers, but his average is, you know, in the mid twos or something like that. I think the thing about Cano, which really, you know, he brings to the table with the Mariners, he just kind of makes everybody better around him. So when he's hitting, it feels like the Mariners are hitting and the Mariners are winning. So I think his numbers aren't so much the problem, just as his productivity and his plus minus in day in, day out, his war, kind of stuff like that. But yeah, I definitely agree that whereas 40, you know, 40 and 110, 120 a year is unrealistic, I think 25 and 80 is a little unrealistic on the low end too. So I think it's kind of just somewhere in between there.
I think it's interesting you guys all mentioned RBI totals. I think RBIs are garbage, but we'll save that discussion for another podcast.
Well, maybe the RBIs are on who's batting in front of you, but hopefully, you know, with that, you know, combo of Haney and Segura and Dyson or whoever's at the top of the order, hopefully they'll get him a couple more RBIs this year.
Fair point. So let's move on to maybe the biggest news of the weekend. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see it. I was actually sitting in the King's Court, and I got to see Felix Hernandez's start on Friday. What did you guys think?
That was Felix. That's the Felix we've been wanting to see all season.
What happened?
That's the Felix we wanted to see last season and never really saw. So, I mean, it's just one start this year. So hopefully this is the start of him getting back into his Felix ways. And, like, he still, knock on wood, hasn't allowed a walk this season. So that's obviously promising. Just, I don't know. I think everyone can agree that that was such a huge relief to see just Felix being Felix. It wasn't necessarily unexpected because, personally, I still expect Felix to be Felix like that in every start. And then I'm just kind of bummed when he doesn't. So, I pray that Felix can have another year like that, like he did in like 2013, 2014.
Amen.
Who's Felix?
No, it's only funny when I do it. Get it together.
No, dude. The Mariners only have one good starting pitcher, and that's the guy who pitches after him.
Adam was like, and soon Paxton will be the number one. It's like, no, Adam.
As long as Felix is in the Mariners rotation, he is going to be the ace. Just right. The reputation and swagger he brings to the team.
Right. agree with
5 years.
Yes.
I think Paxton may, you know, at some point down the line catch up with Felix and, you know, outpace him. And maybe he even has a way better year than Felix does this year. But as long as Felix is in the rotation and the King's Court is in existence, you know, he had, you know, Cy Young caliber years. You know, he won in 2013, had a phenomenal year in 2014, that kind of stuff. You know, he's got the rep of a big-time pitcher, and you're not going to top that no matter how good you are.
Does it concern any of you guys that Felix isn't able to put hitters away? His strikeout total is low. Is that just the new Felix, or do you think that's something that will continue to improve, or does it even really matter? What do you guys think?
I think that's
he's getting guys out. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think that's what he was trying to make a transition to last year. I think last year was kind of his transition period into, you know, hey, he's getting older. He's not going to have the same strikeout numbers he did in his late 20s. So I think he's really trying to find himself how to get outs, just getting the ball put in play to his defense. He needs to learn how to use his defense more than just overpowering the hitters.
His velocity's down. He's getting older, and that's, you know, that's what happens. You can't expect him to be, you know, throwing the same he was when he was, you know, 20, you know, 22, 23, you know, coming into the league, kind of stuff like that, you know, middle, you know, whatever. And I think as long as he can figure out how to use what he has currently, you know, use his lower 90 fastball, you know, use that devastating changeup, that kind of stuff. If he's getting batters out like he did on Friday, you know, I mean, he pitched 7 1/3 innings, you know, gave up, was it one run? Yeah, one run, I think. I mean, that's a phenomenal outing, and I will take that from Felix every single time, even if he gets 3 strikeouts.
Oh, my turn? So, crap, what were we talking about?
Wow.
Oh, wait, hold on. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I mean, so we were talking about all season. He's doing all these crazy workouts that none of us want to do, and we expect him to be back to the way he was. And like Riley said, I think that's it's like a transition period, which he transitioned from flamethrower to now. I mean, he still gets guys out, but he's
finesse.
He was flamethrower, but yeah, he's like he's not hitting that, but he's striking out a lot of guys, and now we're getting to another transition point where he's not striking out a lot of guys, but he's still getting him out in other ways. I mean, he hasn't had his upper 90s for a long time. I think we're at another transition point, and it's old Felix, but it's a different Felix that's still good.
Yeah, three years ago, he could miss a spot and still strike a guy out. Now he can't. He has to rely more on his location.
And if it works, it works.
Right. So, we had an interesting point about is Paxton the new ace? Forget title for a second. Forget any kind of name. Is James Paxton the best starting pitcher on the Mariners right now? Yes or no?
I mean, statistically, yes.
Yes or no?
For the first 3 games of the season, obviously he's the best.
Until his finger falls off.
Riley, answer the question, yes or no. James Paxton the best pitcher on the Mariners right now?
Yes.
Right now.
Alex, begrudgingly, right now?
Right now.
Will?
I'm going to have to go with the statistically yes, but I just you can't take away from the what King Felix means to the Mariners.
Right, but if hypothetically yes, the Mariners
– looking at the numbers, looking at just how he's pitched, you can't take away from the fact he's pitched 21 innings, has not given up a run yet. He's probably the best starting pitcher in all of baseball right now.
Oh.
I agree with that too.
His numbers are clearly, you know, the best. I mean, his WAR is the highest out of any pitcher. I know that. I mean, he's crazy.
Right. If the Mariners make the playoffs and they get into a playoff series, game one you would give to Felix, right? Because he's earned it. What if it was game 5 of the ALDS and it's an elimination game? Do you want Felix on the mound or do you want Paxton?
Well, it depends who it has was
yeah,
going.
Yeah, it depends.
Same amount of rest, same everything.
That's like 10 months down the road.
Yeah, who has had the better season? And I think I think the bigger question is if you're in a 1-game playoff, you know, for that wild card spot, who do you go to then? And I think that question can only be answered then, and we can't answer it now because, you know, it all depends on if that acrylic fingernail can hold on, and so what?
Yeah.
if both are.
Maybe we need Felix in game 162 to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And then there's another one game playoff, and then Paxton pitches. Jeez, there's so many variables, Colby. Sorry.
That's all right. Yeah. I'm just saying that if both are healthy and both have 3 or 4 days rest, whatever, to me it's Paxton and it's not really close. I just trust him more right now. And you guys are right, that could change because if Felix we saw on Friday is the Felix we get most of the year, then yeah, you probably go with the bedrock of your franchise there. So
just to put this in some perspective, James Paxton has the highest WAR in Major League Baseball right now.
As a starting pitcher, yeah.
No, as the highest WAR in Major League Baseball of any player. He's right. 1.1 higher than Mike Trout.
Right. I was just saying that as a point that he's only played in three games and he's still.
Exactly.
And we're 5-8.
Yeah. Well, he can only pitch like, we should just clone
once
him.
Every five.
Clone him.
Yeah, we may be 5-8, but we're 3-0 over the last three. So
there you go. Yeah.
We'll get to that in a little bit, but first, Adam, as a favor, he wants us to talk a little bit about the minor league system. Got started last week. A few names he brought up here. He likes Adam really likes Boog Powell. In case you guys couldn't figure that one out.
Yeah.
He's got 3 steals in his last 3 games. Daniel Vogelback is hitting .280 over his last 8 games. And a stolen base. That's right. The perhaps the only stolen base you ever see. Tyler O'Neill has hit 2 home runs so far. He's looked pretty good. And then a couple of the pitchers that he's mentioned, Chris Hessen's looked really good in AAA. Emilio Pagan and Ryan Weber are both guys who could be in the Mariners' bullpen later this year. And he didn't mention them, but I will. Max Posey and Andrew Moore have been really good in AA. I think they've combined to give up 1 earned run. So,
Vieira?
I haven't seen Vieira. Has he been,
Vieira, I don't know what his numbers exactly look like this year, but I know Vieira, he just always brings that 99, 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and, he has good command that he showed during spring training, and, I think a guy like that, is always helpful. I'll look at his numbers, though.
Riley, is there anybody in the minor? I know you're a big Vieira fan yourself, but is there anybody else in the minors right now that's kind of?
Yeah, I've been watching Vogelback. I think he's kind of the next guy to come up.
Yeah.
We kind of talked about this before. The first base situation, Valencia's kind of struggling early on. Mater's been good, but we still need to just keep our eyes on Dan Vogelback down in AAA. He's hitting .303 now. He went 1-for-4 today. Yesterday, like Alex said, he had a stolen base, went 2-for-4.
Yeah.
Let's see here. He's got 2 doubles, no home runs actually, 5 ribbies, 5 walks to 10 strikeouts and 33 at-bats. So, yeah, I mean, he's just looking solid against what is AAA pitching, I guess. He's even got a .400 on base. So, like,
wow. That's
something you expect out of a big first baseman like this.
Billy
so,
what?
right.
What do you think? What do you think the inverse effect of, bringing up, like, say, just like a hypothetical, next couple of days, they're like, all right, we can't do this. I mean, Valencia had a good day today, but, like, let's say the Service and DePoto get together and they're like, we just can't keep doing this Valencia at first thing. And they decide that they're going to platoon, with Vogelback. What if they bring him up? What do you think that does to Valencia's confidence slash, I feel like that almost has the potential to hurt Valencia for the long run more than it does to help him. I mean, what do you think?
I feel like he would see it coming because he can look at his own batting average and
that's fair. But I think, would you rather do something like put Mater at first for the time being and say, you're not losing your spot to a minor leaguer who's, relatively unproven at the big league level. Valencia has been a journeyman, but he's been, in the bigs for, a few years now. And it's one of those where it's just kind of like, do you want to put, a guy who's already on your big league club at his position, a guy who can play it like Mater, and then stick him there because he's earned his big league spot, that kind of thing. And he's not getting replaced by that AAA guy.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see Vogelback come up if Valencia continues to struggle, and they can just platoon at first, and then Moder can be at short until Segura gets healthy.
But if Segura's
not necessarily losing his job, he's just kind of demoted to half to part time.
I get you.
But the platoon was the idea coming into the season, so.
True.
Think he's a veteran. He's already kind of adjusted to the idea that there was going to be a platoon. So
yeah, they told
him it would really hurt his confidence too much.
Yeah.
I think you guys are missing a major factor here, though.
What are we missing?
The defense of Danny Valencia is 1,000% better than what Daniel Vogelbach can give you. And I don't think this is about him. I think this is about Daniel Vogelbach not being a good enough defender right now. And I mean, certainly the late struggle in spring training didn't help, but I think this is more about defense and trying not to clog up your bench with a guy who can really only do one thing. Granted, and you think he can do that one thing. We don't know if he can actually hit.
He can steal bases now. What are you talking about?
That's true.
Added Smoke element to his game.
Justin Smoke was always a monster against AAA pitching. So that, that's some perspective.
Hashtag bring back Brannion.
Oh, gosh.
Richie Sexton is the answer.
Are we just throwing out guys who hit home runs and play first base? Because I remember Bucky Jacobson. I
mean, that's
a big guy you guys want. Jack Cuss.
Oh.
let's say Vogelbach's not coming up, just because it sounds like Segura is only going to be out for the 10 days. Does Taylor Motter become more of a factor at first base, or are you just kind of...
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah. This was more what Will was saying, I guess. So, no, I guess I wouldn't put Motter over Valencia.
I wouldn't put Motter over Valencia either, but I might platoon Motter with Valencia for the time being. Well, when Segura comes back, at least.
How do you platoon two right-handed hitters?
Platoon them in the sense that it's like some days we give the righty bat in Valencia and some days we give them the righty bat in Modern. I mean, you're just saying, look, we're gonna split the reps because you're really struggling some days, Valencia, and Modern's had a hot bat, that kind of thing. But you're not saying, what's the thing? I mean, like, how does the I don't really know quite the variable of. Team control, but what does it mean to Vogelbach's contract status with the Mariners if we brought him up in April versus if we bring him up later in the season?
I think it's just how many options he has, like, to go up and down between the minors.
Yeah, but what is he at right now? Like, do we have a lot? Or are we at nothing?
I think he's got all 5 years.
The way options work Yeah, it's an option year. So if the Mariners bring him up this year, they use an option year. That means they can send him back down and back up all they want. But after this year, they'll have two more option years. And it's, so after three options. So if they keep him down in the minors all year long, which I don't think they can do until September, then he still has three option years and he still has 6 years of club control. So September call-ups don't count towards the options since you're expanding the roster. So what Vogelbach got in September of last year does not count towards his option years. It does count towards his service time, though.
Yeah.
So that's real fast. Anybody else catching your guys' eye besides Vogelbach? I know he's pretty popular in Seattle, and with Valencia's struggles, he's kind of the easy target. But is there anybody else that you guys maybe think might be up sooner rather than later?
I mean, I'm on the Tyler O'Neill hype train, but at the same time, I don't think he's coming up anytime soon.
Riley?
I agree with that. I mean, he's the big name to watch just because he's the big guy, hits bombs.
He hit a 400-foot home run off a tee.
Exactly.
Sorry. Alex, you got anybody?
I mean, who's going to come up and replace somebody? There's no one to really replace right now.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the question with O'Neill is right now, where would you play him? He's not a center fielder. Martin's kind of the obvious guy.
He's not coming up anytime soon. I mean, he's got a good number. I mean, he's 2 home runs, 9 strikeouts. It's going to happen when you're a young guy, but it's one of those where it's like, he's a good player. I think he has a bright future with the team, but for the time being, there's no spot to stick him, and so I don't think he's coming up anytime soon. Why rush it?
Right. Just go ahead, Riley.
Oh, I was just saying, we don't need him on the big league club, so pointless to bring him up. You just lose at bats.
Right. And service time.
Exactly.
I'm going to go ahead and throw a curveball at you here. Quick question and with a quick answer, please. What's more likely to happen? Tyler O'Neill starting a game for the Mariners this year, or him never starting a game for the Seattle Mariners, as in he gets traded in July?
Never starting for the Mariners.
Wait, which one's more likely or more unlikely?
Which one's more likely?
The first one.
Yeah, not playing this year.
No, that's the second one.
Wait.
Let me go. First option is that Tyler O'Neill starts a game for the Mariners this year. The second option is that he never plays for the Mariners because he is traded.
Okay, I'm going with that first one.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's not getting traded.
I think he gets traded.
Riley, you're so stupid.
I don't think he will. I think that's more likely.
I think I agree with him. I don't think either of them are particularly likely, but I don't see the Mariners trading him. He's like the first real, you know, homegrown talent we've had in a long time. I mean, we've had so many guys.
Seager's pretty good.
Edwin
Diaz, yeah.
But I mean, I think it's just one of those where it's like,
right? I get what you're saying.
Track record of bringing guys up that we've drafted. You know, talent development has been lacking for the Seattle Mariners across the board.
So and why would you want to bring him up then if he's gonna suck?
No, I'm saying, why would you trade him?
He's gonna suck because we can't develop anybody.
Yes. Before we move, it's worth noting that there is a new player development system in Seattle that seems to be working well.
Yeah,
but it is also worth noting that Tyler O'Neill is not a Jerry DePoto guy. That's not somebody that DePoto brought in. That is an inherited player. It sounds like he really likes him, but there's really no attachment to him there. So
That is a fair point.
Wait, Jack
Z needs his credit.
Yes. He gets credit for Tyler O'Neill and Kyle Seager, but
so I think the next question then would be
Cano and Cruz and Paxton.
If they were gonna trade O'Neill, what would be substantial trade bait for him or trade
Giancarlo?
Why would you want a more expensive version of Tyler O'Neill?
Because I love Giancarlo.
Or of Mitch Haniger.
Yeah, there you go. It's a little early to get into trade speculation, but at this point, I think you would have to say.
Never
he's probably a starting pitcher.
Yeah, like a two or three starting pitcher.
Probably.
Like Kershaw.
Obviously with a bigger package around O'Neill.
There you go. So let's move on from that, the Tyler O'Neill conversation. Real fast, guys, a couple news and notes. The Griffey statue was unveiled on Friday. Did any of you guys watch it or anything like that?
Yeah, I streamed it when it was going on. You know, it's a really cool ceremony.
The statue.
Yeah.
You guys like it? Do you think it looks like him at least?
I like the shoes.
I'm not sure about the face necessarily.
They always be messing up the face on Griffey. Like his bobblehead, it looks weird.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at his bobblehead right now. It does look weird.
The one last year, like with his plaque, it doesn't really go with his face. It's just
maybe it's really hard to make plaques, the faces look good on plaques.
No, like, plaque looks fine. I'm talking about he's holding the plaque, right. And it's his bobblehead.
Yeah. No, I gotcha. It's just,
good on the plaque, but his bobble part head doesn't look exactly like him.
Right. I don't know if you guys
kind of always whack up the freaking bobbleheads.
Yeah. So I'm looking at a couple of them right now, and they are not not particularly detail oriented in the face, but I don't know if you guys saw that thing that's kind of gone viral with was it Ronaldo? And they made a
janked up Ronaldo's flat statue thing bust.
Yeah, they screwed that up. So maybe that's just really hard. I don't know. I don't make sculptures or anything like that. And
I'm no one to judge. I draw stick figures.
Yeah, agreed.
That's what they should have put up stick figures. Stick figure of Griffey.
But hey, with 3-0 since the statue's gone up, so I say we keep it.
So we burn it to the ground.
This is true. This is the year of the statue.
Now that Griffey is watching over us, we can't lose.
3-0 since the statue went up.
What I did like about this statue, though, was the bat was super cool and the patches on the jerseys.
Yeah, were
very cool.
The attention to detail on the, like, extra things were pretty cool. The accessories, yeah. I should say. That was impressive.
Yeah, one quick note on that before we move on. This is the same guy who did the Niehaus statue out in right center field. And when you talk about the little details, one of the things I always found cool was that the scorebook in front of Dave is his actual scorebook from the Game 5 of the 95 playoff series. They actually etched. And so I think details like that are really cool. I would have to agree with Riley. Yeah,
and his tie is cool.
Yeah, they did a nice job on that one. So one last piece of housekeeping here before we get to the People's Voice question. Safeco Field has kind of been in the news lately thanks to they're serving up some, I guess they are, I don't know if they're fried, but they're grasshoppers. You guys
make Safeco Field? I think they're roasted.
Roasted, there you go. If you guys make Safeco Field this year, are you going to try the grasshoppers?
Yes, I want to try them. Yeah, we did kind of talk, we touched on this last week. I definitely want to try them at some point.
Right. I just wanted to see if your opinion had changed after seeing all the people eat them on TV.
Why would that?
Hypothetically, it sounds like a cool thing, but I just think the concept of eating grasshoppers is still a little weird.
Riley called them crickets.
I did first refer to them as crickets. I corrected myself.
I'm not an etymology major or whatever, but is there a difference between crickets and grasshoppers?
I think we asked that question too.
I think crickets make the chirping sound.
I think one
grasshoppers have the hops.
Okay. Really?
They use their legs in different ways.
Okay. No, here's I got a theory. The Mariners can train some of the grasshoppers to the Sounders, and then they can bring them back as an all grasshopper team.
Oh my god. Okay.
That's my left field theory.
Wow. Okay.
Or our sales of grasshopper snack can be donated to the arena.
To the Soto Arena or the
money isn't a problem.
Maybe we'll talk about that in a minute. But we'll definitely talk about that. I'll add a few audibles to the People's Voice. But in this week's People's Voice segment, we got a question from Joe Kavanaugh. He basically asked, "Do we think that the struggles of Cano and Cruz are related to their age?" Are they simply too old? Did the Mariners invest in players who are too old? What do you guys think?
I think this is something you think about once every player reaches, early to mid-30s. I've definitely kind of worried about that with Cruz. Not necessarily thinking, that he's done. But it's going to be creeping up at some point. He's, 36, I think?
Like 42.
I don't know his exact age. Cano, I'm not too worried about. He's still low 30s. He's still got the sweet swing. He's a different type of hitter than Cruz is. So Cruz,
Go ahead.
What?
Alex, do you think that the Mariners are too old? That why they're struggling?
Oh, we talked about this last week too. Whoever, maybe they listened. Maybe somebody listened. Okay. But we talked about if Cruz getting old. That was before he started being good again. So as long as he's good, he's not old. The end.
True fact. I think that the Mariners may have taken a bit of a risk by, giving Cano so many years, but at the same time, I think the Cano signing, being 10 years, that's a long time for a guy, his age, but at the same time, just getting a big name like that to Seattle was good enough. And so I think it's one of those where it evens out, and Cruz, we gave him 4 years, and everybody bashed, the brass at the time for signing a guy like that to 4 years, and we're in year three and it's still looking okay. So, I think the Mariners can, keep doing what they're doing and get away with it.
Cano is 34. Cruz is 36.
Jack Z for executive of the year.
Carlos Ruiz is 38 and made that athletic catch today. So
Carlos Ruiz.
Yeah. Carlos Ruiz is older than time. But
veteran.
I think that only applies to pitchers. But I don't know. I guess, nobody can be surprised by age. It's something that's well known. You knew Cruz was 33 when you signed him. That works out. That worked out fine. The Cano deal is probably going to get worse in the back half of that contract. But I mean, for now, has he not lived up to exactly what you wanted? So
he's lived up to it, and even if the, you know, I mean, the deal, a 10-year deal to give a guy when he's like 30, that's just not exactly the most prudent deal. But to get a name like Cano into the Seattle market is worth the, you know, we're going to give him what he wants for the sake of bringing a superstar to Seattle.
Yeah, and I think the failure of that contract won't be necessarily Cano's productivity. I think the failure would be if the team does not make the playoffs during the span of that contract.
Yeah, exactly. If the window closes without, you know, something happening.
Exactly.
Alex, anything to add?
No. All right, why can't his swing is so nice? Why can't he hit until he's 41? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's definitely possible.
He's a Brady of the Mariners.
Yeah, it seems that power ages pretty poorly. So we'll see. Cano's not a power hitter, though, or he's not known for his power. He's a kind of a doubles guy. So we'll see what happens there. Right. In just a minute, I'm going to ask a question that will allow us to talk about how much we all love Mitch Haniger. But before I get there, do you guys have any opinions on what's happening with the arena in town to bring back the Sonics and an NHL team?
They just need a team. If the team commits, then the council will be like, oh, crap, we actually have to make a real decision. But, I mean, sooner there's a commitment from the NBA to get a team, the sooner it will all be done.
The problem have to be the NBA?
The NBA and the NHL, too.
NHL first.
Just not a lot of NBA teams right now that are going to be on the move anytime soon. Like, Sacramento was a legit possibility, you know, that when, you know, when Ballmer went after them and stuff like that. But, you know, then it just kind of fizzled out. But I don't really think there are a whole lot of other teams out there that are moving anytime soon. And so unless they're going to expand, which I don't think that's happening either, it's going to be tough for Seattle to fight for a team. I don't know.
In terms of likeliness, I don't think a new arena gets built. I think they just renovate the Key Arena. And yeah, I think NHL comes first because I think they only have 31 teams in their league.
So yes, they can easily number.
Right. They can just add one more team.
Yeah,
which
and
they want to do.
And moving up to Seattle, like that's a prime area for hockey, you know, up Pacific Northwest kind of stuff. You know, there's not a team up here right now, so you know, might as well.
Yep.
Right. Terms of the arena, do you guys have a favorite that's been proposed, or are you just kind of just wanting an arena and you don't really care what the specifics are?
I want the Soto Arena because they'll
yeah,
be like,
I mean,
three in a row.
Right.
Yeah, that arena would be pretty sick.
Will, what do you think?
I think
privately funded.
They should. Yeah. It's not like since the money's not the issue. Why can't freaking city council decide to clear out the space and let the guys do what they want and, yeah, put in Soto Arena?
Because they want to renovate Key Arena.
Yeah, but that's stupid. Make it happen. Key Arena is a sign of the past. Let's move to the future, Seattle.
No, but it's a historical landmark.
Yeah, but you can...
Not technically, not yet, but it soon will be.
Let the storm play there and let the...
The Storm would play in the new arena.
No, we'll leave him in Key Arena for the time being.
I tell you what, if they had drafted Kelsey Plum, I would have let them play in the new arena. But
they're going to be able to play in the new arena.
They're going to play in the – yeah, of course they are. But, you know, one of the things that people need to keep in mind about the Key Arena and why I think I think it's the Oakview project. I think that one's most likely to happen. That's the renovation of the Key Arena. That doesn't have any kind of public financing behind it. So I think that's probably going to be the winner. And the reason why, I think the Soto Arena is better for the fans and for the people in the city. I think the Key Arena renovation is much better for the city government because let's not forget, they do own the Key Arena. It's theirs. And if they don't get a tenant in there right away, then it's just going to cost them money. A little bit of insider politics.
Yeah, the team's got to come first, and I think that Seattle, the city council, is just going to just be like, nah, we're not doing anything until that happens.
Yeah, it's kind of stagnant until then.
Yeah, I kind of disagree with you guys. I think that.
I mean, you don't want to build an arena and then nobody.
Not have somebody show up.
I don't think that
NBA is like, well, we need an arena and to put.
Yeah, it's a jank cycle for the Seattle.
Chicks or the egg.
Yeah, I think though. I don't think that the people in the Oakview Group or AEG or whatever. I don't think they're spending all this money talking about reconstructing the Key Arena if they don't have some kind of.
Well, if they're going to just reconstruct, then it's not that bad. But if they're wanting to put in, you know, if somebody's going to come up with Soto Arena, something like that, then they got to know somebody's coming in. And I think the key for Seattle here is no matter what plan they choose, they've got to hope that an NHL team will commit to coming to Seattle, and then an NBA team will follow that.
Right. The NHL has a big advantage in that Seattle doesn't need a team to relocate to get one.
I think if the NHL team will commit to coming, then the NBA would be, you know, more in favor of moving a team to Seattle to, you know, balance out the fact that, you know, I mean, just to have another four sports city kind of thing.
I think we're basically saying the same thing here. I think we all kind of generally agree that the new arena is probably going to be at Key Arena, but I think we all probably like the Soto idea better. Can we all agree on that? I think we all agree that the NHL comes before the NBA. And you know, I think just me personally, I don't think that a team has to be on its way for them to build a stadium. I think that I think the NHL is coming as soon as Seattle says they're building an arena. So,
agreed.
Yeah, that's just me, but that's enough to talk about the arena, because to be quite honest, I'm not sure we're qualified to talk about it. But
the basketball team could play in safe, though.
Hey, they used to have the Final Four in the Kingdome, so.
In the middle of CenturyLink.
There you go. But now we're just going to finish this up with a couple of quick questions. We might as well call this a Mitch Haniger love hour, here's the question, and then you guys can go on to talk about Mitch Haniger all you want. Who's been the most impressive Mariner so far?
Mitch Haniger.
Evan Haniger. Actually, Paxton has been very impressive.
True. Don't steal my idea.
Alex is the original. So, Riley, you and Will talk about Haniger for a minute, and then we'll let Alex talk about Paxton.
I mean, Haniger's on a 10-game hitting streak. Like, he's hitting super well. He's hitting .294 on the season. It's, what, he's played, like, around 50 games in his career now. So he's leading the team in almost every category. And it's only been a couple weeks, like we've already touched on. But, yeah, it's just super impressive. And he's just fun to watch. You know, he robbed that home run today. He's been doing it all. He had, let's see, how many stolen bases does he have? He has two steals, He's athletic. He can do it all.
Five tool.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, when we got Haniger, the name Haniger didn't mean anything to me at the time, but, you know, kind of like as he progressed through spring training and, you know, I heard more interviews with DePoto and Service and stuff like that, and they were talking about how this Haniger guy has been on their radar for a long time. I kind of watched him through spring and I was like, you know, kind of exchanging some texts with my dad, who's a, you know, big M's fan and stuff like that, and, you know, we're talking, and I'm like, this Haniger dude's going to be the real deal. And my dad's like, you know, LOL, we'll see what happens kind of thing. And I'm just like, you know, really holding out hope he was going to be a beast. And, you know, 15 games in kind of thing, he's really showing like he's the real deal.
Yeah, I think Haniger's on pace to hit 32 home runs and steal 15 bases or something like that.
And we'll see that. That's fantastic.
Right, with a pretty solid defense so far and right. But enough about Haniger. I'm sure we'll be talking about him a lot. Alex, you said James Paxton was the most impressive. Why?
Because his finger hasn't fallen off yet.
Pretty low bar.
The sole reason.
There you go.
I guess he's finally reached what we all thought him and Walker and Holton were going to be. Now he's the only one left.
I don't even know who Danny Holton is.
What?
Never mind. I put him in the back of my mind with Dustin Ackley, Jesus Montero.
No,
Jesus Montero.
Hey, speak of the dark.
Olsen just got hurt.
Speak of
yeah.
hurt. The other two.
Jesus Montero debacle. Michael Pineda pitched six strikeouts tonight en route to the Yankees win. So shout out to Adam for being at that game. Got to see the ex-Mariner.
Adam's a traitor.
Yeah, I don't know who Michael.
He probably only went to that game to see Michael Pineda.
I don't even know who Michael Pineda is. Anyway,
I enjoyed Michael Pineda.
So did I, but again, I don't know who he is. So on the opposite side of the spectrum, who is the most disappointing Mariner so far?
Leonis.
Oh, true.
Okay.
Yeah. He's struggled, although he's not necessarily, like, the biggest name that we need.
Leonis that you're talking about?
Leo, what's yeah.
That? I think...
Riley,
I think
you're talking about Leonis?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, Alex and Riley say Leonis. Will?
Oh, I think Martin definitely part of it, and I think... I'll talk about Valencia. I think that, like, my little perspective is that Martin is not having a great season, and it's sad to see that happen off of a really solid season last year. But I think Martin was such a, like, we were hoping for a bounce-back year that he got, but you didn't necessarily know if that year was always going to, you know, like, be the bar for his career, if that was just kind of an outlier. So I don't know.
All right, two quick questions to wrap it up. So we're running low on time, so let's get through these quick.
There's no time limit.
There is for some of us. Certainly not me. I don't have a life. But anyways, we're pushing that hour mark, so let's get through these. So we just did most impressive Mariner, most disappointing Mariner. What Mariner are you most worried about?
Isn't that the same question, basically?
No, I don't think, because to me, Valencia is, I'll give you an example. Valencia is my most disappointing, but the guy I'm most worried about is Edwin Diaz.
Diaz is fine. Diaz, he had one bad pitch today, and then he got put in a no-win situation against the Angels. It's not Diaz. Diaz will be Puerto Rico World Baseball Classic Diaz in a little bit. You just give it time.
I hope so.
I'm pretty about Altavilla. Altavilla.
Okay.
Yeah,
Altavilla?
Same.
What?
The jawline guy?
Altavilla.
Jawline?
Yeah, I'm worried about him. Like, agreed. At the end of last year, we were kind of seeing, like, maybe he'd be the eighth inning guy and Diaz would be the ninth inning guy. But Altavilla just hasn't really been there this year. Like, today he got super lucky, threw 10 balls in a row, and then his last three pitches were strikes to strike out that last batter.
Andrews.
So, like, maybe those last three pitches can be, like, a transition into some rebirth for the whole season. I don't know. But I think that's something to worry about.
Alex, you sticking with Leonis Martin?
Yeah.
All right. Last question. We'll get out of here. This time next week, the Mariner we will be talking most about is blank.
Ichiro.
Good one.
Okay. I can buy that.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
I mean.
What'd you say, Will?
No, I didn't say anything. I was laughing at Ichiro.
So does everybody just want to say Ichiro?
I mean, I feel like it's pretty obvious Hanegrin and Paxton are still going to get talked about because, you know, that's how this season's going. But, yeah, Ichiro.
Yeah, personally, I want to be talking about Nelson Cruz by next Mitchell week. I want to see him turn around and maybe hit two or three home runs this week.
I want to be talking about Felix. I want to see two good starts between now and then.
Awesome.
I mean, if he gets that, but whatever.
I think he starts Wednesday and Sunday, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So
whenever he pitches again, that's what I want. Felix.
We'll see who's right about that next week. But that's all I have for now. Anybody have any parting shots or any shout outs they want to give before we sign off?
Rita.
Random fact check. Sure. Named Pazos, according to Pazos. Baseball Reference.
Pazos.
Riley also said it was Pazzy.
What?
Oh,
it's
Pawsy,
I think. I looked it up on
someone MLB. Else. I think Colby said it was Poe. I don't know.
I think it's Posey. I'm like almost 900% sure.
I think Posey. It's Stanton. And
okay. So next week our homework will be figuring out how to say Posey. I think the V's just kind of silent. But anyways, guys, thanks for joining us. We will talk to you next week. You know, hopefully the Mariners go, you know, 6-1 or 5-2 this week.
Or 7-0.
There you go. And we're back above 500. So, yes. For all of us here at SotoMojo.com, thank you. Good night. And go Mariners.
Go Mariners.
All right. Go ahead.
Later.